नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। आराध्यात्मप्रदं देवं स्वात्मानं जगदीश्वरं घोरनीतगुणस्पर्शं बुधास्यान्नरखेऽपि स्यात्। The ultimate goal of all ambitions is to become a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If an intelligent man serves the Most Dear Lord, who gives himself to his devotees, how can he desire material happiness, which is available even in hell? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. An intelligent man will never aspire to become a devotee to achieve material happiness. This is the test of a devotee. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitham va jagadish khamaye mama janamani janmanishwari bhavathad bhakti rahit ki tvayi. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. A pure devotee never begs the Lord for material happiness in the shape of riches, followers, a good wife, or even mukti. The Lord promises, however, yoga kshemam bahamyaham, I voluntarily bring everything necessary for my service. Today we are reading from Canto 6 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 18. Entitled Diti Vows to Kill King Indra, Text 75. Indra is preaching pure devotional service. Although, certainly at the time of this particular incident, he is not on this platform. But he understands what is the standard. Throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas, we read about the various predicaments that Indra puts himself in due to his attachment to either sense gratification or false pride. The Lord specially uses Indra for this lesson to the world, because of his very exalted position. He has amazing prestige, amazing senses to enjoy, and amazing facilities to enjoy. But time again, he falls into these traps. To teach the world the pitfalls that we have to watch out for. No one should think that they are above Maya, whoever. Srila Prabhupada would pray to his deities, and he told a devotee, I am simply praying to Radha and Krishna to protect me from Maya. And we find that prayer amongst the greatest personalities because they are humble. The purer you are, the more you depend on Krishna. And within this world, part of depending on Krishna is understanding the power of Maya and turning to Krishna exclusively for protection. Because Maya is very strong. Here we are, insignificant humans in this Kali Yuga. What is our position? And what is Indra's position? Many of these stories are in the Satya Yuga, the Dwapara Yuga, the Treta Yuga. And Indra is not even on this crazy earth planet. He's in the Swarga Loka. He lives for millions and millions of years by our standards. But still, and he's a devotee. He's a serious devotee. But he just keeps getting trapped. So many traps. Sometimes he's attracted to Gautam Rishi's wife, Ahalya. Huh? Why? He has Sachi, he has all these apsaras in the heavenly planets. Why is he attracted to Ahalya? So much so that he disguises himself as Gautam Rishi to enjoy her. And he thinks he won't get caught because he's in disguise. The demigods are watching. And they're all his assistants. Yes? The sun is watching, the moon is watching. They see everything. And many of these demigods, they're under Indra's authority. What a humiliating situation he's putting himself in. Now, you would think, how is this possible? Why would he do that? He already has so much. Why go through so much trouble? Krishna tells in Gita, dhyayato vishayan pungsang sangastang, that when you contemplate the objects of the senses, attachment. From such attachment, lust. From lust, anger. Because it can't always be fulfilled. From anger, our memory is bewildered. What does that mean? Our memory is bewildered. That means the things that we know, we forget. We know what we should be doing. We know what their consequences are, but we just forget. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And then we act in such ways that we fall into the material pool. Very, very dangerous situation. So Indra, he knows the philosophy. And how he was cursed by Gautam Rishi. And you'd think he'd learn his lesson. But then, again, he does things like this. Yes? And as far as his attachment to prestige and wealth, again and again, he's losing his wealth to the demons. And he's approaching Krishna, please bring it back. And his mother's approaching Vishnu, please give it back. And then he gets it back and he loses it again. And his prestige, was it Prithu Maharaj? He was performing yajnas. Prithu Maharaj is an incarnation of God. But Indra's stealing the horses and disguising himself as different kinds of tantric sannyasis just to keep stealing horse after horse after horse. Prithu and his son are about to kill the rascal, but still he keeps doing it. Hare Krishna. And in Vrindavan, Govardhan Puja, Krishna knows exactly where Indra's at. He wants to expose him. He wants to teach a lesson to the whole world, and especially a lesson to Indra himself. What did Krishna do? He just convinced them to offer all the bhoga to Govardhan. Indra's watching. And Govardhan manifests himself as to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's just offering the bhoga to the Lord. But Indra couldn't see it. He was blinded by his pride. Doesn't make sense. But lust and anger and pride, it doesn't make sense. There's no logic to how a person behaves when they come under the control of these forces. And Indra, he sends these clouds of devastation to Braja to destroy everything. To destroy all the cows and the bulls and the gopas and the gopis and Yashoda and Nanda and Krishna and Balaram. Why would Indra want to do that? He's a devotee. He's a Vaishnav. We read in the Samaveda and other in the four Vedas so many prayers to Indra. The Vedas are full of prayers to Indra. He's not an ordinary being. But here he's trying to destroy God and he's trying to destroy the spiritual world. Gokul Vrindavan is none different than Goloka in the spiritual world. And then Krishna, little seven-year-old boy, lifts the Govardhan hill with the little finger of his left hand and holds it. Now, if that is not obvious to Indra, that Krishna is the Lord of his life. But he was blind, blinded by his pride. He was, for 7 days and seven nights, he was sending winds trying to blow the mountain off Krishna's little finger. Cyclone winds. The kinds of winds that just create tidal waves, tsunamis, and devastate the universe. Massive rains. It wasn't falling in drops, it was falling in pillars. All of his power. Even when the clouds just told Indra, we're exhausted, there's nothing we can do. He was practically beating them. Work harder, when they were just couldn't do anything else. And he attacked himself with all of his powers. He was throwing his thunderbolt repeatedly. at Govardhan. Try to just crush it, crack it, make it fall. Govardhan was smiling. Thunderbolts, what can a thunderbolt do to Govardhan? It was like flower. He felt it like flowers offering. Because under him was Krishna's finger, which was just nourishing him with unlimited bliss. And then Indra realizes, what kind of fool am I? I've 7 days, 7 nights, I've tried to kill God and destroy the spiritual world and kill all God's most intimate associates, Radharani and Balaram and everybody. And he's very humiliated. He comes with Surabhi Kau and begs forgiveness. Krishna forgives him, tells him not to do it again. But he keeps doing it. And he's a Vaishnav. And that's the amazing thing. He does all these things. And what's in the Puranas and what's in Srimad Bhagavatam, we are only speaking a few little things that Indra has done. Carries on again and again. But yet, whenever Indra is attacked by the demons and he turns to Krishna, Krishna incarnates to save him, despite all his mistakes. Yes? Krishna is so merciful to his devotee. He keeps teaching him a lesson. Krishna smashes him, but saves him. And actually, when Krishna smashes him, he's saving him more than when he apparently saves him. Yes? Krishna appeared on earth. Why? Because Indra approached Brahma. Brahma with Indra went to the ocean of milk and prayed to Kshirodakshaya Vishnu to incarnate because of all these demons. Yes? So Krishna comes to rescue Indra, and then the same person that comes to rescue him, Krishna tries to destroy. Yes? Then a little later, Krishna kills Kamsa, kills Jarasandha, kills all these people just to protect Indra. And then he brings what was lost from Indra back to Indra. And Satyabhama wants a flower, a parijata flower from his garden. Hare Krishna. Krishna is the proprietor of everything that exists. He just saved Indra. He just saved Indra's entire dynasty again and again. That's why he incarnated. Picks one flower. And what happens? Indra declares war against him. And then there's a fight. And again, Krishna defeats him. And again, Indra's all humiliated and begs forgiveness and says, I'm such a fool. But then whenever he's in trouble, this is the beauty. Krishna is always there for Indra to save him when he's in trouble. When he's in trouble, when demons are attacking and taking away his service and taking away his abode and his... Then Krishna comes as Vamanadev, Krishna comes as Ramchandra, Krishna comes as Varahadev, Krishna comes as Krishna. Again and again. When Indra was trying to churn the ocean of milk, it started sinking, so the Lord comes as Kurma to stabilize it. Again and again, he's coming. But just to give Indra his service back and his powers and his opulences. But then the same service and the same powers and the same opulences cause him to become infatuated, to think I'm the enjoyer. And then he contemplates the objects of the senses. Then he becomes attached. Then he becomes lusty. Then he engages in sinful activities. And Krishna smashes him. And then subtle lust, he becomes proud. And he commits offenses. Krishna keeps smashing him. So many of the greatest stories of the Bhagavatam, the basis of the story is Indra. Yes? Just like the story of the churning of the ocean of milk and ultimately Vamanadeva's appearance. What's the seed beginning of that story? Indra's riding on his elephant. And everybody's going, you know, Jai Indra. And Durvasa Muni, very great sage. He wants to give blessing to Indra. He wants to bless him. So he takes a garland off of his own body and hands it to Indra as a blessing. Now the nature of a person who's proud is they can't appreciate the value of mercy. Very dangerous. When you're given something, some special mercy, you cannot appreciate the value of it. A humble person can appreciate anything given to him or her. A proud person doesn't appreciate. Just like if someone from the West comes to India, they've never gotten a garland in their life. Because garlands, unless you live in Hawaii or something, nobody knows what is a garland. Yes? So you and me, we get garlands all the time. You think, oh, very nice. But somebody from the West, they come, they get a garland. They want to take pictures of themselves with the garland on. And they go back to the West and they tell everybody, do you know what happened when I came off the plane? They put a garland on me. Flowers. It's so important, so meaningful, because it's so new. They never had it before. But sometimes when people just keep giving you garlands, it's like, please, you know, just leave me alone. So when you get too much of something, you can't understand its value. And that is the story of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. Because they were so wealthy and so powerful, they couldn't appreciate. They're hard-hearted. Srila Prabhupada in this regard explains a poor man, any saintly person could come to his house and they'll offer all respect and they'll bow down and they'll beg, you know, for mercy. And they'll give whatever little they have. But the tendency of wealthy people is they have gates around their house. They have dogs barking. Usually big dogs. And if somebody comes, what are you doing here? What do you want from me? They can't appreciate. Someone's coming to bless them, they cannot appreciate because of their pride. So this is Indra's condition. Durvasa Muni gives him a garland. Indra was not wanting to offend Durvasa Muni. He was not thinking any negative things toward him. He was just thinking, you know, another garland. So he just threw it on his elephant. And elephants, however great an elephant is, they're still animals, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's a very intelligent elephant. more intelligent than us, but still, he doesn't understand the value of a garland. So he just threw the garland between his legs, the elephant's legs, and just and the garland got crushed. Rivo. So Durvasa Muni understand, what pride. I give him my blessing and he just sees no value to the blessing. Well, maybe he'll take more seriously a curse. And it worked, definitely worked. Took that curse really seriously. He lost everything. And it took years and years to get it back, churning ocean of milk and this and that, everything else, and ultimately Bali takes it back. Vamanadeva ultimately had to come and save him. Vamana appeared as his little brother. Then the Vritrasura story, yes. What's the beginning of that? Indra's in his assembly, and Sachi's next to him, and everybody is giving him chamara offerings and singing songs. He's the king. The king is supposed to get that kind of worship. But he's not supposed to be infatuated. The king is supposed to understand, I'm only representative of God. I'm taking it on behalf of God. It's not mine. As soon as you think it's yours, you start to fall. His guru, Brihaspati, comes in. And Indra's just so much thinking about himself, he doesn't honor his guru. What happens? He loses everything. Again and again. But still, again and again, Krishna comes to save him. In so many ways. He saves him by rescuing him. He saves him by smashing him. But through it all, Indra understands what the ultimate goal of life is. And here it is very clearly revealed in this particular verse. Although, I mean, in this particular story, look at what Indra has just done. And yet he's preaching to her. It's really amazing. It's very interesting, actually. Here is Diti. She's very upset with Indra. Not because he's a demigod, but because he's so attached to sense gratification. And he's always falling into Maya. So for his sense gratification, he called Vishnu to kill his sons. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. Very interesting. We discussed this yesterday. Diti doesn't blame Vishnu because she knows he's the supreme worshipable Lord. And she loves Vishnu. She worships Vishnu in her own way. She doesn't blame Prahlad, because Prahlad's her beloved grandson. She blames Indra. It's all his fault. My dear, wonderful, noble, pious son, Hiranyakashipu. Obviously, she knew he was impious. But for her, those were minor details. Because love is blind. And when Hiranyakashipu was killed, Hiranyaksha killed. It broke her heart. She's a mother. Only a mother knows what it's like when a child is killed. The parents are supposed to die before the children. At least that's what's expected. But when the children die first, it's very, very painful. So she's grieving. When Hiranyaksha died from Lord Varahadev, she was grieving so much that Hiranyakashipu had to come and preach to her to pacify her. And he explained about the eternal nature of the soul and how there is no death and all of that. Very good philosophy. But then he vowed to get revenge. So Diti, she couldn't blame Prahlad because he was absolutely faultless. But she could blame Indra because he was full of faults. Prahlad did not call Narasimhadev to kill Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad was always respectful, well-wisher of Hiranyakashipu. It was Indra who wanted him dead. Yes? In fact, Indra wanted Prahlad dead. Narada Muni had to come and rescue him. So Diti's very disturbed. And she's performing a yajna to have a child to kill Indra. Now Prahlad, what would he have done? He would have just chanted Hare Krishna. If Krishna wants to save me, he will save me. If Krishna wants to kill me, then it's the right time for me to die. What is the problem? Well, what does Indra do? He disguises himself and starts doing obedient service to Diti. Just so that when she's the slightest bit inattentive in her execution of the sacrifice, he could move in to kill the child in the womb. I hate to say it because Indra's a Vaishnav, but he was an abortionist. Literally. He was literally committing an abortion. And you know what Manu Samhita and all scriptures say about that. But this is how attached he is. He knows his soul is eternal. And he's been smashed so many ways and so many times. But still, he's so attached. Better that this crime is committed than I lose my status and my facilities. So not a very straightforward person. He comes as an obedient servant, a friend of Diti, to serve her and serve her and serve her months and months. And then when she falls asleep without washing properly, immediately she was vulnerable. And he just, by his mystic power, went right into the womb with his thunderbolt. This is a serious abortion. They don't have this type of technology today. He goes right inside. Not like a laparoscopic, you know. The doctors today, they do laparoscopic. They put little telescopes in your body and they can see what's happening. Well, Indra doesn't have to do, he just goes right in. He just goes right in to make sure that the surgery is complete. Right inside of her with his thunderbolt, sees the child in the womb, sends the thunderbolt. And he wanted to be thorough. He didn't cut the baby in half, which is probably what a normal abortionist would do. He cut it in 7 pieces. Yes? And then all 7 pieces became babies. Then he cut all 7 into 7. There were 49 pieces, and each one became a living baby. And then Indra was about to throw another thunderbolt. And the children said, "We're devotees. Why are you doing this? We're your friends. We're not going to hurt you." So then Indra says, oh, then come out. So now he becomes the expert gynecologist. It was an absolutely, no gynecologist could be like Indra. It's totally painless. No labor pains. And what is that call where they cut you open and take it out? Yeah, something like that. He didn't have to do that. He didn't have to use his thunderbolt to cut her open and then get all the kids, come out. Nothing like that. It was so painless that DT just took a nap. And she was like, and then she woke up and she sees Indra sitting there with 49 children. And she just looks, what's this? They say, we are your children. He's a good doctor. When he puts his mind to doing the right thing, he's really good. And he's explaining to DT, because of your devotional service, two things happen. One is, I had no power to kill your children. Because you love your children so much in devotional service, because you perform such bhakti under the instructions of Kashyapa Muni, doing this sacrifice. Your children were protected by Vishnu due to your devotional service. I had no power to harm them. I tried everything, but I couldn't. And because of your devotional service, they all have pure hearts. They're all devotees. DT, she didn't understand this. Kashyapa Muni tricked her. She was performing devotional service to Vishnu for 1 year to have a child that would kill Indra. But the mantra could either mean kill or be a follower of. But because she did all this devotional service, the child in the womb became purified by her devotional service. So how could he go out and kill somebody after he's purified? Hare Krishna. This is the power of a mother performing devotional service. So much immense benefits are there for the child in the womb. So these are very, very pure, pious, beautiful children, the Maruts, 49 of them. And they're all smiling at mother. And they're saying, we are devotees and we want to help Indra. And in this situation, Indra's preaching about pure devotional service to the mother. The ultimate goal of all ambitions is to become a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If an intelligent man serves the most dear Lord who gives himself to his devotees, how can he desire material happiness, which is available in hell? And tomorrow's verse, since many of you won't be here tomorrow. Oh, my mother, oh, best of all women. He's calling Diti his own mother because she is the co-wife of his mother, Aditi. And in Vedic culture, an auntie, as you call, is a mother. Oh, my mother, oh, best of all women, I am a fool. Kindly excuse me for whatever offenses I have committed. Your 49 sons have been born unhurt because of your devotional service. As an enemy, I cut them to pieces. But because of your devotional service, they did not die. Shukadev Goswami continued, Diti was extremely satisfied by Indra's good behavior. Then Indra offered his respects to his aunt with profuse obeisances, and with her permission, he went away to the heavenly planets with his brothers, the Maruts. Yesterday, Radhesham Prabhu illuminated the class with his veiled instruction in the name of a question, that if we do not have this pure desire for devotional service, if we still have material desires, if we still want God to give us material things, we should practice devotional service, but a sincere devotee, an actual Vaishnava, according to this purport, is one who will not pray to God, give me those things. But an actual Vaishnava is one who will pray to Krishna, please take away that desire. There is a very subtle but very powerful difference between the two. We may have desires for things. An insincere devotee asks God, fulfill that desire. A sincere devotee understands this desire is very powerful. Please, Krishna, take away the desire. Make me pure. I may not be pure, but please make me pure. Because, as Indra's saying, with tremendous realization, an intelligent man serves the Lord. And if we don't want anything from Krishna, Krishna gives himself. If we want things from Krishna, Krishna gives things to enjoy. But what's so great about that? Indra says, material happiness is even available in hell. If there wasn't any material happiness in hell, there wouldn't be so much suffering. In this world, you get a little happiness and a lot of suffering. In hell, you get a lot less happiness, but a lot more suffering. But the reason the suffering is so bad is because of the attachment to the happiness. That's what gives spice to suffering. It's like Indians like spice. Some of our brahmacharis, you take spice out of the food and they don't know what to do. But that's what gives a certain spice to suffering is material happiness. We get it, we enjoy it, we become attached to it, and then, oh, how bad it is. When you have the happiness of loving someone, and then that person either leaves you or is taken away by the power of destiny, how much pain it is. The story of Chitraketu is all about that. To the degree you're attached to getting happiness from something, to that degree that thing can cause you the most pain. Indra loses his intelligence and acts in abominable ways when the things that are giving him happiness appear to be taken away. They're about to be taken away, or they have been taken away. Suffering. And we read in the Vaishnava literatures that great devotees never want sense gratification, mystic powers, or even liberation. They always ask for the same benediction, simply devotional service to the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj, he was offered any benediction. What did he want? He said, as long as anybody's in this world in forgetfulness of you, let me come and suffer in this world and take birth to try to help them. How many of you would ask for that? I don't mind coming back forever. As long as someone's in ignorance, forgetful, let me come back, suffer whatever I have to do to help that person to go back to your loving service. And my father, he tried to kill me. He hated me. Give him liberation. Prahlad asked for nothing for himself. All his desires were for the welfare of others. Why? Because that's what pleases Krishna. To live for others pleases Krishna. Haridas Thakur beaten in 22 marketplaces. Unbelievable. He's not praying even for protection. He's only praying, please forgive them. Give them your mercy. Don't harm them. And when Haridas was offered any benediction in the Mahaprakash Leela, he asks, he says, I don't want anything, my Lord. But if you want to give me something, if it pleases you to give me something, in every birth I take, let me be in a position where I'll get the remnants of the food of your devotees. Let that be my prominent service, birth after birth after birth, to eat the remnants of your devotees. I am so abominable, so sinful, so fallen. I want people to think I'm very important. And I'm so shameless that I'm asking such an elevated benediction from you when I don't deserve it. I'm asking to be a Vaishnava. Let me just be a dog where I can eat the food of your devotees as the servant of the servant of your servants. Kolabecha Sridhar was offered everything. The Lord, anything you like. Material wealth, heavenly planets, mystic cities, liberation. I just want to be the servant of your servant. And let me serve you by just remembering that little beautiful child, Nimai, coming to steal my bananas. Vasudev Dutt, burning one desire, he said. For a long time I've had this desire. I have no other desire. Nothing else. And you are the Supreme Lord. I know you are independent and you can fulfill any desire I have. Please fulfill this one desire. I beg you. What is that desire? Give me the benediction. You see, my Lord, when I see people suffering in this world, it breaks my heart. They're suffering because they've forgotten you. They're trying to enjoy apart from you. And so much karma, so much sin is upon them. Let every sin and all the karma of every living being in the entire universe fall on my head. And let me take the reactions of everyone's sins, and I will suffer hellish conditions perpetually. But give them all your liberation. give them all entrance into your abode. And he meant it. How is this possible? To us, this is so extreme. How could anyone ask for such a thing and mean it? And he meant it so seriously that Lord Chaitanya, all he could do was cry. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cried. Couldn't even speak. He was so emotionally moved by the compassion of Vasudeva Dutt. This is all you want? In response, Lord Chaitanya glorified Vasudeva Dutt as if he had 1,000 mouths. Such a great soul. Now, when the Lord speaks your glories as if he has 1,000 mouths, he is really pleased with you. That is the purpose, to please Krishna. Lord Shiva says in the 8th canto that there is no service that pleases Krishna greater than accepting inconveniences and sacrifices and difficulties for the welfare of others. That pleases Krishna. On Jaladutta, what benediction did Prabhupada ask for? If you were 70 years old and you just had 2 heart attacks and you were on a cargo ship and you only had $7, 40 rupees, and you're coming to a strange land and you didn't know if anyone was going to be there to meet you, you may pray to Krishna that please let someone be there to meet me. Otherwise, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? In America? Hare Krishna. Not like in a nice modern airport he arrived. At the docks, just dirty, you know, all these, you know, union dock workers just loading and unloading huge crates, really rough people. That's where he came out. Just walked down this little rope ladder from the boat off the ramp, and he just starts walking. It's in the middle of the night, I think. He's just walking. Didn't know where to go, what to do. He didn't pray to Krishna, let someone be there, restore my health. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. If Krishna wants to do that, we don't have to ask for it. Krishna supplies what a devotee needs for his service. Therefore, Prabhupada didn't ask for that. He only asked, make me an instrument of your mercy. Give me the speak through me to reach their hearts. Let me be your puppet to rescue these fallen souls. That's Vasudeva Dutt's mood. That's Prahlad Maharaj's mood. That is the mood of the great souls. Thakur Narottam was a king. He was cleaning the stool and urine of his guru. And not only, the guru refused to accept him as a disciple too. That's the feature part of the story. He was rejected by his guru. He wasn't his guru. He asked for initiation, and Lokanath Goswami says, I will never initiate you. I cannot initiate you. Go somewhere else. I cannot. I'm not qualified, and I'm not in the right state of mind. So there was no format, there was no formal connection there. But Narottam Das Thakur just had such reverence for him as a Vaishnava and in his heart of heart considered him his guru, whether he accepted him or not, whether there was any formal initiation or not. To such an extent, he was secretly going to clean his guru's urine and stool where he would go every day. And there was no the only person who knew he was doing that was Krishna. Nobody else knew. He wasn't advertising. He wasn't putting it on internet that I am cleaning Gurudev's stool every day. Pray for me. Nobody, he didn't tell a single soul. He didn't even tell his guru. He was just content doing the most menial, humble service that a human being can do for another. And he was so happy just with that service itself. Lokanath Goswami had to hide and discover him. Why are you doing this? Narottam Das Thakur. He said, I gave up all this wealth, material wealth. And in return, I have got the greatest wealth. Service, servant of the servant of the servant. That is the greatest wealth. That is what I have achieved. What Indra says is the happiness available in hell. I gave all that up to the happiness of the spiritual world. Servant of the servant of the servant. Most menial servant of the servant of the servant. Internally, Narottam Das Thakur knew that Krishna was pleased with what he was doing. Although no one else on earth knew what he did. Ultimately, that's all that matters. So we're pleasing Krishna. So here is Indra. Despite all of his habits, his conditionings, and despite his whole history, Indra knows what is of real value. He knows what real wealth is. To be the servant of the servant of the servant. And although he gets smashed every time he wants anything else, and I believe that Krishna uses him to teach us. But he knows. So in whatever condition we may be, one of the great blessings of the Krishna consciousness movement is we know. However fallen we may be, and devotees sometimes can become quite fallen, we have seen, and do even horrible things, which is abominable. But one thing is, they know. When you come in contact with the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, when you come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, or any of the true representatives of Prabhupada, you know what is the only actual happiness there is and the only desire we should strive for. And that is why Prabhupada, he would not compromise. He was very, very lenient to let people come according to their own sincerity and level and forgive people who did sins and everything, but the principle he would never compromise, that only undivided pure devotional service is our goal in life. If we compromise the principle, it's impossible to ever approach it. But Indra understands the principle. And he's so lucky. Despite all this stuff, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, he was going to Navadvip and worshiping Lord Chaitanya secretly. Because he understands, he knows. So we should be striving and praying to Krishna, please take away everything from my heart that impedes my progress in loving you with a pure heart. Natanamna janamna sundarim kavitam vajagadishakami mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rohaiti kitvai. Is there any questions? Yes, Anasuya Devi. The microphone is coming just for you.
In this particular incident, Indra has behaved in a very vicious, mentality was very evil. His desires were themselves were very evil and vicious, and yet he has got away with everything, and he has got followers and maruts, and he has gone back to his, he's been pardoned for whatever he has done. So, and you just said that with every, Krishna tries to teach us in every incident of Indra. I fail to get what this incident is actually teaching us from Indra. Okay, Aditi has forgiven him. Diti's prayers, we can understand that she has done prayers, she has done so much of yajna, and she has, her sons have benefited and she has benefited. But how do we understand from Indra's behavior from this incident, Maharaj?
We understand how Diti was protected and how Diti's children were protected. Because she was following Kashyapa Muni's instructions to worship Krishna. And not only that, but even Indra was transformed by her association. He realized what a complete fool he was. He realized that he had no power to harm these children because they were protected by the prayers of his mother, who was protected by Krishna. So he's not just speaking politely that I'm a fool. He really understood that he was a fool. And he understood the greatness of Diti because of her devotional service. So he was transformed, at least for the time being. He was transformed through the situation. He realized her greatness, he realized Krishna's greatness, and he realized his own stupidity. Hare Krishna. One more question, Brajabihari Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you were mentioning in the beginning of the class how...
So Indra's misconceptions were smashed. Yes.
You were mentioning in the beginning of the class how nobody should think that we are above Maya. Maya is very tricky. And we often hear devotees say that one way we can be protected from Maya is always follow authorities, spiritual authorities. And we have also heard from some devotees that one phrase which many people ascribe to Prabhupada, Prabhupada used this phrase also, that a devotee should be independently thoughtful. So I was just thinking, exactly what do we mean by this, and how is it different from, how is independently thoughtful be, is different from acting independently or not following authorities?
You already know the answer. But for the sake of strictness, you are asking. We follow authority, but we're independent, thoughtful on how to execute the will of the authority. We're not independent, thoughtful of whether we should execute the will of the authority. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada told our Srila Prabhupada, preach Krishna consciousness in the West. Yes? In the English language. That's all. Now, Prabhupada's independent thoughtfulness, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't say, go to Sumati Murarji, sit at her step in Juhu, Bombay until she gives you a ticket on the Jaladuta, and then go to Butler, Pennsylvania, and live with Sally Agarwal with her husband Gopal, and then go to the Bowery, and then meet Mukunda Maharaj and Janaki Devi and start 26 Second Avenue, and then go to San Francisco, and then go to Montreal, and then go to London, and then come back to India. That was all independent thoughtfulness. Yes? Everything Prabhupada did was all independent thoughtfulness. How to do it. He went to Jhansi, it didn't work, so he independently, thoughtfully went back to Vrindavan, Bamsi Gopal, and then he went to Radha Damodar, and then he came to Bombay. But it was all in execution of his guru's instruction. He wasn't independently thinking, should I do what my Guru Maharaj said? I'm independent. Maybe I should do something else. So we should be independently thoughtful in using our creative, God-given talents, intelligence, on how to execute, but not whether to execute. Yes? If you're asked to go to colleges and preach, there's so many ways you can go to the colleges and preach. Yes? You can have yoga retreats, you can have yatras. So many things are independently thoughtful of amongst the brahmacharis going to the college. So many ideas. Sometimes they have debate competitions, and sometimes they have yatras, and sometimes they have yoga retreats, and sometimes they start little centers in different places, and they cook prasad, and they decide what's to be cooked each day. Yes? Sometimes dosas and idlis. Sometimes pizza. It's all independent, thoughtful. But it's not that, well, I'm supposed to do college preaching, so I'm going to build a temple in Kashmir. Of course, if you're told to build a temple in Kashmir, then there'll be a lot of opportunities for independent thinking. Huh? I know, that's why I'm saying it. But I didn't say you should do it, I said if you're told to do it. Govinda's the one who usually tells, so you should be very nice to him. Govinda Prabhu. Independent. Prabhupada wanted us to be independent thinking. He wanted us not to be robots, but it should be in pursuance of the instructions of the authorities. That's the difference between philosophical speculation and mental speculation. philosophical speculation is, Krishna's God, so let me try to understand deeper and deeper and deeper how he's God. Mental speculation is, let me try to figure out whether he actually is God or not. There's a difference. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.